Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Council to discuss downtown projects. The Ector City Council is expected to decide Tuesday night if it wants to enter an agreement with Sina Realty that would result in two downtown restaurants and a rooftop bar. Casey Hallmark, Executive Director of Downtown Odessa, said the council is considering entering what's called a 380 agreement with a company. Under the terms of the agreement, the city would deed property at 5th Street and Grant Avenue to Sina Realty. In exchange, Sina Realty would be required to make a $2.5 million investment into the lot, construct two restaurants within 30 months, and once in operation, add 25 new jobs to the existing 20 full-time positions they currently have, Hallmark said. A 7-year monitoring agreement would also be part of the deal to ensure the benchmarks are met, she said. There are clawback provisions in this 380 agreement that would allow the city to come back in and take the land back, and that would include any development on that land if they're not meeting their contractual obligations, Hallmark said. The plan would be for the current El Sinaloense Mariscos and Bar to move to the new location, Hallmark said. The second restaurant, which would include the rooftop bar, has yet to be determined. The great thing is, in my opinion, the move would open up a restaurant move-in ready spot for a new restaurant to come in, Hallmark said. This would not be the first time the city would enter into such an agreement, Hallmark said. This was done with Torchy's Tacos. This was done with Icon. And these are a pretty common tool that cities use, Hallmark said. They give cities some control over what's coming in, what's coming into our downtown area, and making sure that we see progress. Early next year, Downtown Odessa plans to put out two additional requests for proposals for other lots downtown, he said. Also on Tuesday's agenda is a discussion on selling water to the Greater Gardendale Water Supply Corporation. Odessa City Manager Michael Marrero said the company approached the city of Odessa a few years ago about the possibility of entering the same sort of agreement the city has with the Ector County Utility District for wholesale water. Under the terms of the agreement, the city would sell the company water at $4.01 for every 1,000 gallons, Marrero said. The company, which will continue using several wells for their primary source of water, projects its average daily demand to be 0.095 million gallons of water a day, Marrero said. It's taken from early 2021 to now to get to the point where they've been able to design the system that would be necessary to carry water to Gardendale, Marrero said. We've also got a much better understanding of what sort of volumes they would be wanting, and really what they're looking for represents less than 1% of our typical daily use for the city of Odessa. The company would be responsible for any infrastructure cost, Marrero said. The initial contract would be for 30 years, but they would potentially extend it twice for 10 years each time, he said. Quick hits, early voting continues. Early voting for the November 8th general and the Ector County Utility District election runs from through November 4th. Voters are welcome to call the elections office for location information. For Odessa, call 432-498-4030 and Midland, call 432-688-4890. Registered voter may also visit the webpage for early voting schedules, election day vote centers, and sample ballots. Ector, tinyurl.com/mrxn4yvd. Midland contact, tinyurl.com/36b5a3ct. Secretary of State, contact www.sos.state.tx.us. MC Cosmetology and Pink the Basin, the Midland College Cosmetology Program, Room 159, Technology Center, 3600 North Garfield Street, Midland, has scheduled a breast cancer awareness fundraiser from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Tuesday and Thursdays through October 31st. MC Cosmetology students will be offering pink hair extensions for $5, which includes a donation to Pink the Basin. Visit tinyurl.com/6HHVFW6K. Free blood pressure and glucose screenings. The Medical Center, Hospital Family Health Clinic, West University, 6030 West University Boulevard, has scheduled a free blood pressure and glucose screenings from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. each Tuesday through December 27th. Visit tinyurl.com/2YVKB55C. Trunk or Treat Adoption Event. Odessa Animal Shelter has scheduled a Trunk or Treat Adoption Event from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. today at Bubba's, 6153 Highway 191. Adoption fee is $27, cash only. Visit tinyurl.com/38UC7CD2. Halloween Pet Parade. Monahan's Kids Zone presents Halloween Pet Parade today at the Ward County Event Center, parking lot 1525 East Monahan's Parkway, Monahan's. Registration starts at 6 p.m. and the parade starts at 6:30 p.m. All pets dressed up in festive costumes are welcomed. Prizes will be presented. Fee is $20 per pet, includes photo. Proceeds will benefit the Building Campaign for Monahan's Kids Zone. Visit tinyurl.com/3VDDU5EK. Live Center Fall Fundraiser. The Live Center has scheduled a fall fundraiser with Speaker Mike Pompeo, U.S. Secretary of State in the Trump administration, at 6:30 p.m. today at the Midland Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Visit tlcdonor.org/fallfundraiser. Neighborhood Watch Meeting. The Odessa Police Department, 205 North Grant Avenue, has scheduled a neighborhood watch meeting concerning domestic violence at 7 p.m. today. Hear presentations from Safe Place of the Permian Basin, Crisis Center of West Texas, and the OPD Crime Victim Liaison. Visit tinyurl.com/yc-68SANU. Conservative Partnership Funding Applications Available for West Texas Landowners. The Borderlands Research Institute announced it is now accepting applications for its Greater Big Bend Conservation Partnership Program. This is a cost share program that will reimburse approximately 50% of the overall cost of qualified conservation practices to selected landowners in Brewster, Jeff Davis, and Presidio counties in West Texas. The application period will be open from October 24th through December 16th, and applications are available online at tinyurl.com/BP97BWEY. BRI, along with the Texas Agricultural Land Trust, have joined forces with the USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service to implement landscape-scale conservation initiatives across the greater Big Bend region of West Texas. The effort is fueled by a $3.5 million commitment from the NRCS Regional Conservation Partnership Program, which will help fund innovative conservation approaches on private lands, including habitat restoration efforts, conservation easements, and ecosystem services compensation. Eligible habitat management activities include, but are not limited to, grassland restoration via brush management, riparian restoration, and construction of wildlife-friendly fencing. The Big Bend Conservation Partnership is managed by the BRI Center for Land Stewardship and Stakeholder Engagement, which is responsible for implementing restoration and enhancement projects as well as monitoring and evaluating projects. TALT personnel will provide the expertise for all conservation easement agreements, as well as evaluation of ecosystem services, and assessing ecosystem services compensation options. We appreciate the partnership with NRCS and TALT to support West Texas landowners in enhancing conservation of wildlife habitat in the Trans-Pecos region of Texas. Billy Tarrant, who leads BRI's Center for Land Stewardship, stated in the press release, "We encourage landowners to apply for these funds, and we look forward to supporting them in their conservation efforts." NRCS's Regional Conservation Partnership Program, RCPP, funding provides opportunities for conservation partners to collaborate one-on-one with farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners throughout the nation to implement systems that conserve water and soil resources, improve the health of wildlife habitats, and increase climate resilience. RCPP partners offer value-added contributions to amplify the impact of RCPP funding. To date, RCPP has leveraged partner contributions of more than $1 for every $1 invested by USDA, resulting in nearly $3 billion collectively invested in natural resource conservation on the nation's private lands. Upstream jobs boom. Since the low point in exploration and production, or upstream, employment like that in the Permian Basin in September of 2020, the oil and gas industry have averaged adding 1,913 jobs per month, including 900 in September, the Texas Workforce Commission reported. That's total growth of 45,900 to the current workforce level of 202,900, the state says. September 2022 jobs were up by 34,900 or 20.8% from September 2021, said Texas Oil and Gas Association President Todd Staples Monday in Austin. "We continue to see steady growth in upstream oil and natural gas employment, which is good news because these jobs pay among the highest wages in Texas and directly contribute to our country's national and energy security. What we need are policies that enable critically needed infrastructure projects to move forward to continue job growth and maintain energy security for our country," Staples said. OC trustees meet. The Odessa College Board of Trustees will meet at 6:30 p.m. today, October 25th, in the Zant Community Room of the Salisbury Campus Center, 2001 West University Boulevard. Some of the items on the agenda are: consider and approve purchase of network switching, consider and approve AIA agreement for pedestrian bridge, AIA contracts and forms are consensus documents that reflect advice from practicing architects, contractors, engineers, as well as owners, surety bond, producers, insurers, and attorneys, https://aiaiala.com/why-useaia-documents-2/. Utilizing Medical Center Health System contracts for purchasing, monthly financial statements and budget amendments, quarterly investment report, informational items, education report, adult education and literacy, institutional effectiveness report, Vision 2030 Plus update, President's report, National Night Out, 3430 Finale, Noche de Arte, Odessa College Latinx Art Show, Nadia Rivas, nominated for the Don Quixote Outstanding Hispanic Educator Award, Purvis Evans, named Impact Academy Fellow. Local news roundup. Inmate found dead in Ector County Jail. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths told the Odessa American on Monday afternoon that an inmate at the Ector County Jail was found dead in his cell. The man was identified as 55-year-old Douglas Walter Hossell. The man was found at 5:40 p.m. October 21st. Griffiths also explained Hossell was in jail for felony possession of a controlled substance and felony theft. Next of kin initially couldn't be located to be notified, but they were notified on Monday. The Texas Rangers are conducting the investigation. Woman arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault. A 36-year-old woman was arrested Saturday after her common-law husband told deputies she attacked him with a handsaw. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, deputies received a 911 call from the 8300 block of North Golder Avenue Saturday, and when police arrived, a 33-year-old man told them Naomi Acosta assaulted him with a handsaw, lacerating the webbing between his thumb and index finger. He also told them she took the phone away from him while he was on the phone with dispatchers. Acosta was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony, and interference with an emergency request for assistance, a misdemeanor. A second-degree felony is punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. Acosta remains in the Ector County Jail Monday on surety bonds totaling $11,000. Odessa, a man arrested on aggravated assault charge. A 49-year-old Odessa man was arrested Saturday after his girlfriend told deputies he threatened her with a machete and a kitchen knife. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, deputies received a 911 call about a disturbance in the 1900 block of South Loving Trail. When they arrived, a 37-year-old woman said she and Alexander Galindez Leo were arguing in the bedroom when he produced a machete and threatened her with it, the report stated. When Galindez Leo set the machete down, the woman said she hid it under the couch cushion, but then he grabbed a kitchen knife and threatened her again, the report stated. The woman called 911 after getting away, according to the report. Galindez Leo was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. Galindez Leo remained in the Ector County Jail Monday on a $20,000 surety bond. Warrant issued for men with history of DWI convictions could face life in prison. A 37-year-old man with a history of drunk driving convictions failed to show up at his trial Monday and has had a warrant issued for his arrest. If convicted of DWI, Raul Navidad Lara could be sentenced to 25 years in prison. Ector County District Court records show Judge Justin Lowe issued a warrant for Lara's arrest when he didn't arrive in court Monday morning, and he was allowed defense attorney Tony Chavez to withdraw as his attorney. If arrested, Lara would have to post a $500,000 to get out of jail. Court records show Lara has an extensive criminal record. Going back 20 years, he's been convicted of aggravated assault of a public servant, burglary, evading arrest, possession of marijuana, driving while intoxicated, and possession of a controlled substance. Lara had been released from the Ector County Jail in December 2020 on a $15,000 surety bond and ordered not to drink alcohol and to install a deep lung breath analysis mechanism on his vehicle. Man arrested on drug charge. An Odessa man is facing a felony drug charge after a tip led to an Ector County Sheriff's deputy finding cocaine in his vehicle, according to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report. A deputy received a call from a confidential informant telling him Kareem Tadeo Bonilla Gutierrez, 21, had cocaine and was parked in a parking lot at John Ben Shepherd Parkway and 42nd Street. The deputy pulled Gutierrez over on 42nd Street for having expired tags, and Gutierrez gave him permission to search his vehicle. According to the report, the deputy found 4 to 20 grams of cocaine inside. Gutierrez was arrested on a possession of a controlled substance charge, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. Gutierrez remained in the Ector County Jail Monday on a $20,000 surety bond and an Immigration and Customs Enforcement hold. Fort Stockton woman dies in wreck. A 29-year-old Fort Stockton woman was killed in a two-vehicle wreck on FM 1053 Saturday morning, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Chelsea Kel Sanchez was traveling south on FM 1053 around 7 a.m. Saturday when her Nissan Rogue inexplicably veered across the center line 16 miles west of Crane and hit a northbound Dodge Ram occupied by two Crane residents and a man from Amarillo. Sanchez, who was wearing a seatbelt, was declared dead at the scene. The three men in the Dodge who were also wearing seatbelts suffered non-life-threatening injuries. Family files lawsuit against Odessa Funeral Chapel. A lawsuit has been filed against Acres West Funeral Chapel and a funeral director by seven siblings who allege the funeral home cremated their mother after they signed a contract with her to be buried at the Ector Cemetery. According to the lawsuit filed last week in Ector County District Court, Edendina Madrid Rodriguez died December 19, 2021, and was survived by four sons and three daughters. One of her daughters, Sylvia Valenzuela, entered into a contract with Acres West for funeral and embalming services on the advice of funeral director Christy Mohan, the lawsuit stated. As part of the contract, Acres West was to provide a funeral ceremony and provide a viewing at the funeral home, a burial chapel service, and a casket, the lawsuit stated. The funeral home was also supposed to prepare a plot at the cemetery. Despite the agreement, the lawsuit alleges the funeral home cremated Rodriguez, causing mental anguish. A call seeking comment from Acres West was not returned. Valenzuela and her siblings claim Acres West was negligent in training and supervising its employees, especially considering the possibility and magnitude of the potential harm to them and others, the lawsuit stated. The siblings are also suing for breach of contract and violation of the Deceptive Trade Practices Act, according to the lawsuit. The family is not seeking a specific amount in damages, but would instead rely upon the collective wisdom of the jury to determine an amount that would fairly and reasonably compensate them, the lawsuit stated. In addition to seeking compensation for the amount they spent at Acres West and others as a result of the funeral home's actions, they'd like to punish the funeral home for such unconscionable overreaching and ensure such actions don't happen again, the lawsuit stated. The family is also seeking attorney's fees. Family of Odessa woman files wrongful death suit against Dr. Permian Women's Center. The family of an Odessa woman who died the day after a laparoscopic hysterectomy have filed a wrongful death lawsuit against her obstetrician, gynecologist, and Permian Women's Center, according to the lawsuit filed last week in Ector County District Court. Rocio Gordillo, 40, went to Dr. Pil Raja because she was experiencing pain and abnormal uterine bleeding, and Raja scheduled her for a total laparoscopic hysterectomy on October 22, 2020. During the surgery, Raja is accused of lacerating Gordillo's abdominal aorta with a trocar, the device used to make small puncture-like incisions, the lawsuit stated. Raja called in a vascular surgeon to repair the aorta, and the surgeon found a 1-centimeter laceration in the aorta, a laceration to Gordillo's small bowel, mesentery, and significant bleeding from the jejunal vein, according to the lawsuit. The vascular surgeon and a general surgeon worked together to repair the abdominal aorta, and during the repair, the single mother of two went into cardiac arrest and had to undergo CPR and get multiple units of blood and platelets, the lawsuit stated. She was taken to the cardiac care unit and died the next day. A representative from Raja's office stated she would have an attorney call the Odessa American with a statement. No call was received. The lawsuit alleges Gordillo's death certificate lists her death as acute respiratory failure, multi-organ failure, coagulopathy, and trocar injury to aorta. Raja listed her manner of death as natural, according to the lawsuit. Raja is accused of being reckless and overzealous in his use of the trocar, during the surgery, and the lawsuit further alleges Permian Women's Center is liable for the negligent acts and omission of its employees. The lawsuit, which was filed by Gordillo's older daughter, Amber Alexandria Garcia, and her mother, Belen Gordillo de Magallan, are seeking general damages and punitive damages of more than $1 million for themselves and for Gordillo's older daughter, Dayanara Anali Saucedo. Health professionals urge regular mammograms. Dr. Mason Hicks and radiology technologist Ashley Morcheco are always busy, but during Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October, things ramp up even more. Hicks, a radiologist and fellowship-trained breast imager, and Morcheco are at Medical Center Hospital's Women's Imaging Center. After putting off mammograms the past couple of years, Morcheco said she feels like people are finally coming around. Hicks said the majority of women are in average risk and should start having yearly mammograms at age 40. The importance of that is we want to detect breast cancer early when it's small, because in those cases, it's most of the time treatable and we can save more lives than waiting until a lump is felt or the problem has presented itself to the patient. For those who wait, he said, treatment is usually more extensive and there's less chance of a cure. Morcheco said a lot of women think that if they don't feel anything or there's no family history, then they probably don't have breast cancer. But I would suggest getting it every year, because some cancers you're not able to fear. You're not able to have any symptoms. So like Dr. Hicks was saying, you might as well just do your yearly and make sure you're good instead of waiting until you have problems. And it might be too far, Morcheco said. Hicks said about 75% of the breast cancer they see in women that don't have any known risk factors or family history. So if we were only concerned about screening the patients that are known to be high risk, we'd be missing the majority of the breast cancers, Hicks added. Even if women have implants, Morcheco said, they should still get mammograms. We're checking the implants and the breast tissue, she added. Some women should start having mammograms earlier than 40 if they have a significant family history of breast cancer or a known genetic disposition. There are a few other situations where ladies would need to start earlier. If they are unsure about that, that's something to talk to their doctor about to see if they meet any of these criteria that would necessitate them starting at a younger age, Hicks said. Hicks said a comfortable pace for reading screening mammograms for him is 15 to 20 per hour, but it's rare for that to happen just because we've got other things going on and phones ringing and questions and all that stuff, he said. Morcheco said some women have misconceptions about mammograms and get very anxious about the short procedure and think it's going to hurt. It does get tight, it is compression, but we're not trying to make every woman just fall down with tears. Most of the time, after the exam's done, they say, it wasn't as bad as I expected, so I feel like the stories and all the negative stuff about mammograms really hurting really bad. I would just say, come check out for themselves. It's not as bad as they play it out to be. It does get tight, but it's nothing like labor pains. I feel like women, we get through a lot worse than a mammogram. And if it is severely hurting them during the exam, just tell the tech, we will stop. It's not like, sorry, gotta keep going, Morcheco said. Hicks said the exam is tailored for each patient. It's not a set amount of compression on every patient. It just depends on the anatomy and the patient's comfort. I would also say in premenopausal ladies that are still having menstrual cycles, strategic scheduling of the screening around the time when the breasts tend to be less tender can also be helpful, he added. The techs also talk you through the process and explain what they're doing. It is cold in the exam room. The temperature can't reach over 70 for the machines. If they start to overheat, then they're not going to turn on. So our exam rooms are very chilly, Morcheco said. Virtually 100% of these screenings are 3D, Hicks said. I can think of maybe one or two exams over the last year that I can remember a screening that wasn't 3D. But for all intents and purposes, every screening we do down here now is 3D, he said. 3D screenings help doctors see a lot. Not only does it help us to detect potential abnormalities when they're smaller or could be potentially obscured by dense tissue, also, on the flip side, it also decreases the likelihood of you being recalled for additional imaging that doesn't pan out to be anything, so it's beneficial in multiple ways, Hicks said. Usually the screening mammograms, the exam itself takes 5 or 6 minutes, Morkeko said. It's pretty quick. You probably wait longer to get checked in, fill out your papers, all that stuff up front before coming back, she said. Hicks said a breast without any kind of abnormalities, it can take a minute or two to read the image. 3D does take a little bit longer to read than the traditional 2D mammograms, but a lot of it just depends on the patient's anatomy and how complicated it is. But generally speaking, 3-4 minutes most of the time to read a screening mammogram. We really, really try to read those exams within a day or two. We have to read all screening mammograms within 30 days. That's a requirement under the MQSA. The exam has to be reported within 30 days, Hicks said. Generally, the patient would get the results within a week from the exam. It can take longer if a patient has moved here from another state or town or had their mammogram at another facility, Hicks said. It's always good to have their current image to compare with previous ones. If something is found, Hicks said, the patient would receive a letter saying their mammogram showed something that needs to be looked into further. The report would go into the medical record and to their doctor. We have a process in our department where we get these patients over to the scheduler so the doctor's office can be contacted and the patient can be contacted to get the patient back in the additional imaging that's needed, Hicks said. Morkeko said when the patient returns for a diagnostic exam and the extra images and possibly an ultrasound taken, Hicks will give them the results the same day. The patient will also get the results in the mail and they will be faxed to the patient's doctor. Hicks performs breast biopsies and localization procedures, but not actual surgery. Sometimes if they do come in for a diagnostic workup and we do need to do a biopsy, sometimes we are able to do it with the same day, depending on insurance orders and medications and the schedule, Morkeko said. Hicks said if it's not the same day, it's definitely within 2 to 3 days. It would be rare for somebody to have to wait longer than that, he said. Hicks stressed again the importance of making sure to get a yearly mammogram, because it's a really simple and relatively inexpensive test that could potentially save your life. Morkeko added that breasts change over time, so it's good to have a trial of images to compare. I would just come every year. I also hate that ones that wait 5 to 10 years and it's like, oh, this doesn't look good. I wish they would have come every year. We would have caught it a lot earlier than what it is now. It's just a process. So I agree, just come every year to try to eliminate the chaos, she said. According to the American Cancer Society, overall, the average risk of a woman in the United States developing breast cancer sometime in her life is about 13%. That means there is a 1 in 8 chance she will develop breast cancer. This also means there is a 7 in 8 chance she will never have the disease. According to the Brevard Health Alliance website, Breast Cancer Awareness Month began in 1985 as a partnership between the American Cancer Society and the Pharmaceutical Division of Imperial Chemical Industries. Betty Ford helped kick off the week-long event. As she was herself a survivor of breast cancer, she was diagnosed when her husband Gerald Ford was president of the United States and brought even more attention to breast cancer. Local news roundup. Dracula comes to the Globe Theater. With Halloween just around the corner, the Odessa College Theater Department brings you Dracula on stage at the Globe Theater. Josh Rapp, drama instructor, said that those who have read Bram Stoker's novel Dracula will be pleased because the OC Theater Department's adaptation of the play follows the novel with some variations. And for those theatergoers who don't know, Dracula They will see it play for the first time and really enjoy it. The play is set in 1897 in London and Transylvania, but the dialogue is modern English rap added. This play is a classic that's been out for a long time, but it is modernized in a way that makes it more accessible for the audience. Show times and dates are 7 p.m. Friday, October 28th and Saturday, October 29th. A special Halloween show at 10 p.m. on Halloween night, October 31st, will be available for anyone who wants to celebrate a scary night at the theater. The last performances will be at 7 p.m. Friday, November 4th, and a matinee performance at 2 p.m. Saturday, November 5th. General admission is $15. Faculty and all students are admitted free with a school ID. Everyone must have a ticket, and tickets can be purchased at tinyurl.com/YRW2CZ2Y. Parents, students invited to come sample ECISD meals. Ector County ISD School Nutrition is taking a new step in involving students and their families in the school menu process. From 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, ECISD will host a first-of-its-kind event for district parents and their children, a food show and exhibition at the Marriott Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Visitors can sample foods from some of the biggest names in food service as they taste what is on menus now, plus potential future items. Admission is free for ECISD students and parents. First Responder Equipment Initiative. The Permian Strategic Partnership and the Permian Road Safety Coalition will host the First Responder Life-Saving Equipment Initiative starting at 10:30 a.m. today, October 25th, at the Midland Fire Department Training Center, 3215 FM 307 in Midland. An equipment demonstration is at 11 a.m. STEAM Fest planned. The community is invited to attend UTPB's first-ever STEAM Fest from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Science and Technology Building on campus. Representatives from different STEAM departments, science, technology, engineering, art, and math, will be hosting a fun interactive activities for families.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, October 22, 2022. Viewpoints. Closing arguments. Beginning with early voting on Monday, Midland voters will begin the process of selecting candidates for mayor and a city council member in Midland, along with three Midland Independent School District Board members. Election day is November 8. Following are closing arguments for candidates in this year's races. Tommy Bishop, Midland ISD District 3. Ready to continue my commitment to MISD. I ask for your support and vote as I charge to be reelected to the MISD School Board District 3 seat. I have been a homeowner and taxpayer in District 3 for 17 years. I have a passionate investment in this community and care deeply for my fellow friends and neighbors. With your support, I will continue to listen to the needs and wants regarding MISD and put forth action on your behalf. My love for our students, teachers, and community is big. I am passionate about protecting public education and staying vigilant in keeping our schools safe in and outside the classroom. With your support, we will continue to push for safety solutions and fund additional campus police positions. I have three children that attended MISD schools. During the 16 years served on the board, we did lower school taxes each year. The tax rate was lowered this year to 10.88 cents. So the savings on a $100,000 home is $108, and $200,000 home is $217.60. Our district employees have received raises every year since I have been on the board. I will continue to do all I can to support our MISD employees. As a District 3 board member, I will continue my commitment to quarterly community meetings. Campus visits are part of my commitment and allow me firsthand experience with our teachers and students engaged in learning. I enjoy reading to our elementary students and attending various school functions. I will stand behind the schools in my district, as well as the campuses they will feed into. We have some fantastic students at MISD, and I want their entire school experience to be healthy and supported. I am not in favor of closing any of our schools. I will support all resources needed to solve difficult situations without extending or adding additional in-district charter schools. We have what it takes to cultivate change locally. I believe in our teachers and administrators. As a board member, I understand my roles and responsibilities. I will continue to be transparent in our schools and our community. I do not support critical race theory, CRT, or radical ideology in student curriculum. We are in the process of hiring a new superintendent for our district. And I would like to see someone that has West Texas ties and a vested interest in our district. We no longer need to be a stepping stone or resume builder. This is a vitally important decision. And we need a strong and thorough board on deck to get the right leader chosen. I ask for your vote this election. Vote Tommy Bishop for MISD Board of Trustees, District 3. I thank you for your support. Reagan Inyojos, Midland ISD District 3. Is Midland ISD better off after the last 16 years? For the first time in 16 years, District 3 finally has a choice in its school board race, and it deserves an opportunity to have choices. For 16 years, we have seen our district decline academically, with some of the worst schools in the state of Texas. For 16 years, we have seen trust with the community deteriorate and teacher morale reach an all-time low. For 16 years, we have seen the decline of fully certified teachers employed by MISD, while the employment of uncertified teachers has increased. For 16 years, we have seen our secondary schools reach full capacity, while its buildings begin to reach the shelf life of much of its internal infrastructure. For 16 years, we have seen the oil industry survive and thrive, but struggled to recruit employees to relocate to Midland, preferring to transfer to Africa, where they have pristine and modern facilities at their international schools. For the past 16 years, we have seen the increase in portable buildings keeping many of our children outside the brick-and-mortar main campus and not well-protected. For the past 16 years, we have had the superintendent's position occupied by 9 different individuals. For 16 years, we have seen our MISD police department reduced to have only 1 officer for every 2 campuses, leaving us inadequately protected. For 16 years, we have seen the discipline issues become more violent and more frequent, while the need for a juvenile justice alternative education program, as recommended by the state of Texas for metro areas over 100,000, has gone without an advocate. For 16 years, we have seen the children of MISD not prepared for college or a career. With the history of the past 16 years behind us, I ask you, are we better off than we were 16 years ago? The opportunity for parent control over school choice is also at stake, with the reversal of our representative support for in-district third-party charters such as IDEA, YWLA, and Sam Houston Collegiate Prep. All 3 have become shining stars in our struggling school district. The buyer's remorse from District 3's current representative was explained in their desire in having control over these schools. The problem with their need for control is that YWLA, IDEA, and Sam Houston College Prep have done in 2 years what couldn't be done in 16. The other problem is that their control doesn't have academics as a contractual obligation, like YWLA, IDEA, and Sam Houston College Prep are required. They have misconstrued the facts on IDEA Travis that it cherry-picks students. In fact, Travis took in over 80% of the previous year's students. With Travis's decade of failure, it's easy to see why the other 20% parents would have opted out regardless of the new direction. And with the fiscal cliff looming, we are going to need any and all additional funding to prevent a tax increase, which these partnerships help provide. I am running to get back to the basics. Do the small things well. I want to start by primarily focusing on the schools in my district, where two of the elementary PTAs need more support and enrollment, and Alamo Junior High, with my help, has brought back its PTA into compliance, although it has the lowest enrollment among its cohorts. I will invite churches, companies, and nonprofits to support District 3's campuses, taking advantage of the relationship I have built over the years through business and volunteering. I want District 3 to be the example that the rest of MISD will want to follow. I am also running as a parent, and equally important is that the rest of the children in MISD deserve a better education, well-supported teachers, safer and functioning facilities, because for many, it is their only opportunity for a better life. I am also running as a born and bred Midlander who is a product of MISD. When people ask me why I'm running, I tell them that I was born to parents who had me when they were 16 years old and did not have the opportunity to graduate high school. Many times, MISD was the only place I would receive a meal, central heating and air, and even discipline. I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for my teachers, principals, coaches, custodians, bus drivers, and lunch ladies. I want to make sure that the children with little or no opportunity have the same chance at a quality education that I received. I believe it's a calling on my life to give back to a district that has done so much for me. Would you help me by voting for Reagan in Yohos and move MISD forward? Brandon Hodges, Midland ISD District 5. Midland ISD's important issues are worth discussing. 1. What is your stance on school bonds? As a Midlander, I understand the need for and importance of investing in our local schools. I am in favor of supporting the right bond and reinvesting in Midland schools. The focus should be on a bond that adds the most value to our students, teachers, and support staff. We must bridge the gap between investing in our schools while keeping the average Midland taxpayer in mind. I look forward to continuing to work with MISD to build a new elementary that will service the new homes off 349 in the Northeast. We are working hard to develop a plan for building this elementary school without the need of a bond. Regardless of this can be accomplished. We must offer those students and parents high-quality seats in an elementary school, which reduces the overcrowding at Tommy Franks. As a product of MISD schools, I was here when we had academic success and acceptable facilities. With the proper planning and community involvement, we can once again become an academic example to the rest of the state. 2. Are you a supporter of MISD continuing to offer schools of choice, such as in-district partnerships and magnet schools? Access to a good education should be something that everybody can enjoy, not just a select few. School choice allows parents access to alternative educational opportunities when their children are stuck on a failing campus. Having options also allows for competition between the charter schools and traditional neighborhood public schools, which forces both to provide high-quality seats to keep their students. Parental rights are the pillar of our society and should be at the forefront when determining the best educational options for their children. Our DOI, District of Innovation campuses, should continue with their missions currently. We should allow these options to continue if they are meeting their agreed-upon metrics. Our DOI campuses, in-district charters, and traditional public schools should all be working together for improving student outcomes. Choice should decrease bureaucracy in education and empowers teachers and parents to better educate students. These educational options are already anchored in Midland, and we should allow them to continue to improve education for Midland students if they are meeting their agreed-upon metrics. 3. What issues do you believe your district needs to address in its academic program and offerings? What changes would you recommend? We need to make sure we are providing the best curriculum, instruction, and training for our teachers. District support needs to make sure any programs adopted for use in the classroom are used with fidelity. There are too many examples of MISD purchasing new programs that have never been able to be implemented properly. Without fidelity in use, the new programs only encumber the teachers and take away instructional time from our students. If we are serious about improving student outcomes, we will get serious when purchasing programs and training. Offering a safe environment also includes making age appropriateness a priority when determining curriculum and instructional material. 4. What characteristics do you want in a superintendent? I want to see a superintendent with extensive experience and a background in curriculum build their executive strategic plan focused on the foundational skills of reading, writing, math, science, and history. I would like to see a superintendent that converges social-emotional learning with community-based instruction by using our local resources for students to develop strong character traits instead of only technology. 5. What are the basic responsibilities of a member of the school board? The heaviest responsibility of a board member is hiring and evaluating the superintendent. The board also adopts new local policies and reviews them for effectiveness. Adopt an annual budget and set the local property tax rate. Determines local goals and priorities and reviews them periodically for meeting KPIs and milestones. Board members should be communicating and educating their constituents, holding town halls, and being available to attend special meetings and trainings is also a priority for board members. I will show up and represent District 5. I am Brandon W. Hodges, and I'm asking for your vote. Please follow the campaign at facebook.com/HodgesMISD5. John Trashitti III, Midland ISD District 5, advocate for public education, has unfinished business. This school board election is the most important to face the voters of Midland in the last 20 years. The board that will be sworn in and seated after November 8 will select the next superintendent of schools, potentially decide on a facilities bond, and be responsible to continue the positive trajectory that the district is on currently. The last 3 years have been some of the most trying in the history of Midland ISD. COVID challenges and changes in leadership have made improving the quality of education for the students of our community ever more demanding. Despite those challenges, the hard-working teachers and staff have done great work to bring us to this important moment for public education in our community. I want to continue to bring my experiences and perspective while supporting the direction the Midland Independent School District is headed by running for one more term for the District 5 MISD board seat. There is unfinished business. I am a lifelong advocate for quality public education as a product of public school myself and now sending my children to public school. I have had children in MISD for the last 12 years and will continue to have a child in MISD until my youngest graduates in 2032. I want the best for all the students of Midland ISD. My experience as the director of the Midland County Public Libraries, and now as the executive director of the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin, makes me uniquely qualified to serve, as I am both personally and professionally invested in educational outcomes in our community. My focus, if reelected, would be continued improvement in academic outcomes for MISD students. This is the reason we do what we do. We must make sure all actions support this number one priority. There is no question that the facility needs for MISD are great, and I believe there is community-wide consensus for upgraded facilities. Our students need 1. Comprehensive high schools that can accommodate 9th through 12th grades on one campus to achieve vertical academic alignment and cut down on the time students spend on buses and travel between campuses and facilities for extracurriculars. 2. Additional elementary schools for the continued growth in Midland, specifically an elementary school somewhere along the 349 corridor north of the Loop. 3. Current facilities addressed when it comes to maintenance issues. The question of a bond or tax ratification issue is not a matter of if, but when. Budgets reflect values. We cannot say we value education as a community and continue to kick the needs can down the road. Is a consensus needed? Most certainly. We need to be big enough to admit when we get it wrong, which the voters told us we did in 2019, and resilient enough to learn from our mistakes. Going back to the voters is an important step to show what our values are in Midland and our commitment to the election process. As a father of five who has had two graduates from MISD schools and has three currently attending, I am for school choice. I have had my children at neighborhood schools, schools of innovation, and in district partnership campuses. I believe that there is more than one educational structure or environment that can work for students and have successful results. Parents should be allowed to have options for the best possible environment for their students to thrive. There is no cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all answer when it comes to education. I believe that this community wants the MISD board to continue to focus our time and effort on improving education outcomes for students. This is our North Star and should be our primary objective. MISD needs leaders not mired in politics, but individuals focused on policy and substance. We cannot continue to let our attention be divided by divisive issues that do not have any bearing on academic results for students. We must coalesce around actionable items that can be accomplished.
Hypertension med blood stains. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 67-year-old male in relatively good health. I exercise regularly 4 times a week. I have been taking medication for hypertension, which is getting much better since I started a plant-based diet 3 months ago. About every 3 months or so for the last 5 years, there are 2 half-dollar-sized blood stains on my pillow coming from my right ear. I have no headaches, and my hearing is what it is for my age. My wife is concerned, but I am not. What do you think? J.G. Answer, I think your wife is wise to be concerned. This is not something I commonly encounter, and the answer is very likely to be found inside your ear by a clinical exam. I do sometimes see small infections in the ear that may bleed, and there are benign tumors of the ear canal and eardrum that may sometimes bleed as well. I have read about a rare condition of an aneurysm bleeding from the ear. This has been going on for a long time, so it's worth an evaluation.
This is the Dear Abby column. Aunt's broken promises feed a year's long. Dear Abby, my aunt is a money-hungry, conniving thief. From the time I was a baby, she always bought me gifts. But when her parents, my grandparents, died, she literally stole more than $200,000 from them. She claims my grandfather willed it all to her, which is not true because he detested her. She promised my mom $5,000 when she retired. Well, it has been 10 years since Mom retired, and my aunt claims she doesn't remember promising her. Then she claimed she invested and lost it. Do I have a right to be angry at her? Signed, Mad in Michigan. Dear Mad, I think so, and your mother has the right to be even angrier. My question for you is, how much time do you want to waste nursing the grudge? It doesn't hurt your aunt, but it takes up space in your head that could be devoted to positive endeavors. This is not to say you must maintain a relationship with this woman. Quite the contrary. Dear Abby, we have been visiting our children and have been asked to remove our shoes when inside. I am a diabetic. I have been complying with the no shoes edicts, but reluctantly. We keep our shoes on in our home, so spending several days padding around in my socks makes me uncomfortable. Abby, diabetics are cautioned to keep their shoes on at all times, even inside. There are real risks to a diabetic's foot. Also, I have trouble navigating stairs and slipped several times while climbing or descending the stairs in my stocking feet. It's dangerous for me to go up and down uncarpeted wood steps. It seems to me that the no-shoes folk should think about some of these issues before issuing a mandate. Signed, Diabetic Dad in Missouri. Dear Dad, do nothing that is counter to your doctor's orders. If you haven't explained them to your children, do it now. Perhaps a compromise could work. Buy a pair of shoes or slippers for indoor use only that you leave at their home for the times when you visit. However, if they are not open to this idea, you will have to visit with them only outside their home. Dear Abby, I like this guy at work. I think he's cute, but I don't know if he's interested. I also don't know if there's a chance he would ask me out. I'm scared I might be considered a cougar. I am older than he is by 5 or more years. Please advise. Signed, Anxious in Maryland. Dear Anxious, are there any rules at work that discourage employees from dating each other? Some businesses have them. Does this guy spend time talking with you during breaks? If he does, it's a hopeful sign. Has he mentioned what he does outside of work and whether he's seeing anyone? If he does flirt with you, you could always ask if he'd be interested in meeting for a drink after work, going to a sporting event, etc. But be prepared that he may want you only for a friend. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.